Bulldog Live here on the Pulse at 1-866-823-1077. Christophe Courchaine, we continue our conversation with him from the Conservation Law Foundation. Seeking the Current is a movie that opens up this week in New Hampshire, and it'll be starting March 8th in Colebrook, actually, but it will be coming into Concord at the end of this week. So, again, Conservation Law Foundation, among the many groups that are helping to make this presentation here in New Hampshire. Tell us a little bit about the opening days, both in Colebrook as well as in Concord.
Sure. Well, the movie will start out in Colebrook, and then it'll move its way south. And we've got an extended run over the weekend at the Red River Theater. So, you know, it's showing with a matinee or with an evening show there. There's a showing on Sunday afternoon in Wilton that I'll be participating in with the director. And on Monday night, we're going to have a panel discussion after the 7 p.m. showing of the film, which is part of the Green Concord Screen Living series, which they do every month. But this will involve a panel discussion with myself and Will Abbott from Forest Society.
Yep.
And also the director. So those are some, you know, good early opportunities to get to meet the director, hear his story about, you know, why he wanted to make this movie, and you know, what his experience has been up in Quebec. I think it's a really, you know, it's a really fascinating film, really well done, filmed in high definition, so you get you really get the sense of being up there in this pristine wilderness, which has been, you know, changed irrevocably.
Yes, it has. Also, for anybody in the Lakes region as well, it'll be showing in Wolfboro on Friday night.
Oh, yes, on Friday night.
At the Wolfboro Public Library. And so that's the same night that it opens in Concord as well, at the Red River Theaters.
Yes, and I think the director will be up there in Wolfboro for that showing.
Oh, good.
And he will be kind of following the movie throughout the state as it goes. On Tuesday night, we're going to be down in Auburn at the Massabesic Center. So that's very convenient to Manchester folks.
Yes.
And we're sponsoring that along with the Appalachian Mountain Club and
Audubon Society of New Hampshire.
Yes, and Audubon Society of New Hampshire is also co-sponsoring that showing. And we're, you know, we're delighted to have that facility, and we'll be down there. And Wednesday night we'll be in Hanover at the public library up there.
Good. That'll be Wednesday the 14th, next Wednesday. Yeah. So, good. Well, again, go to BrianTilton.com, Northern Pass page. I have the listing of all the places. It'll be in Plymouth as well. It'll be in Keene. So it's all over New Hampshire.
We tried to cover the bases, give everyone an opportunity to see it. I think that you'll enjoy it if you come out to see it, whether you can come for one of the evening panel discussions where we'll really put this film in the context of Northern Pass, in the context of these other proposals to import power from Hydro-Quebec. And, you know, there'll be I don't know if it's a good time to talk about the webinar, which I encourage
yes,
people to.
Yes, please do, because that'll be coming up before this movie,
yeah,
right?
Yes, we're hosting kind of a preview of the movie on Friday in a free webinar. And if you haven't participated in a webinar before, they're really easy. You just need an internet connection and a computer, and you can kind of log in, see the slides that the participants in the presentation are putting forward. It's kind of like going to a presentation, and you can either call in with your phone or hear the audio on your computer. It'll be 2:30 p.m. on Friday, and I think you'll have a link to that up there as well, Brian.
I do, actually. Yes, in fact, it links to the Conservation Law Foundation, so you can register for this ahead of time.
Yeah,
right?
You can register for it, and it's a really simple process. It's completely free, so I'd encourage people, if they're interested in learning more about the you know, environmental issues associated with hydropower and also some of the energy issues.
Which we will get to. We're going to get into that. We will in this segment.
We're going to go through some of that during that call. And, you know, I think that'll give – the director will also be participating in that. So we're excited to have
terrific. Well, that webinar put on again, Conservation Law Foundation, the Appalachian Mountain Club, Conservation New Hampshire, the Nature Conservancy in New Hampshire, as well as the Society for Protection of New Hampshire Forests. So everybody's involved with this.
Yeah, I think that what's really great about this issue is that regardless of where you're kind of coming out in the end, or whether where you feel, you know, where you feel this Northern Pass project should go, whether it should, you know, go forward, whether it should be changed, whether it just be
bury it or kill it or
just
whatever.
Be buried, killed, whatever your perspective is on it. It's, you know, it's an important piece of the public dialogue and debate on this issue is to understand what the power source is and what the impacts are. And so that's really why all of us are involved. We really want to help bring some of these issues to light in a way that hasn't been discussed so far.
Yes.
It's been discussed in very simplistic terms, and that's not really serving New Hampshire and its residents.
You can't do it just on a glossy ad that goes in the mail or a full-page ad in the newspaper. You really got to look at this and the studies, as you've blogged about, too.
No, the issues here are, you know, they're complicated, and, you know, the environmental impacts associated with this power source are important, especially if this is just a project about the environment.
Yeah, there you go. Well, good. Well, Jeff from Epsom wants to join the conversation at 1-866-823-1077. Jeff, you're on Bulldog Live, along with Christoph Corshane from the Conservation Law Foundation.
Hey, I appreciate you taking my call.
No problem.
The reason I'm calling is I'm not a fan of Northern Pass because of the eminent domain issue, and I think that if it's going to happen, it should be buried along the 93 corridor to get rid of the unsightly mess coming down across the country. But the reason I'm really calling is to find out where the environmental groups stand on where they think we ought to be getting our power from, because you know, everybody's got objections to nuclear or wind because of the view or what have you. And I'm wondering where the conservationists come down. What's their favorite source?
It's a great question, Jeff. The conservation community, you know, certainly has different views on different types of power. You see some people having concerns about wind power, some people having concerns about nuclear power. There's definitely different voices out there with different concerns. From my organization's perspective, what we're really going to is, you know, in the next 4 to 5 years, is we are basically moving more towards an energy system that relies on a mix of natural gas, renewable energy, where especially wind power is coming down in price rapidly and is becoming very competitive. And you're looking at a really strong emphasis on energy efficiency and what's called demand response. There's so many low-hanging fruit. There's so many investments that are very, you know, relative on a cost-benefit analysis, relative to building power lines at a $1 billion price tag. If you invested $1 billion in energy efficiency, you could see peak demand, which is what drives the energy system, come down quite substantially. And we've done a lot of work at figuring out what a realistic mix could be. But you're looking at more renewables, more efficiency, and out with the old. I think that's really one of our messages, which is that coal, as was alluded to on a prior call, is out of the money. It's becoming uneconomic, and it's being driven off
the
system.
Look at what it's costing us here in New Hampshire, for crying out loud.
And then, you know, New Hampshire is having to pay the cost of it, which is a whole other conversation.
And there's more coming.
And it's important also to emphasize that, you know, from our perspective, that hydropower is not necessarily something we should say absolutely not to under no circumstances. But what's important when you see a source of power like hydropower that has these trade-offs is how do you balance them? And so the current proposal is to bring all this Canadian hydropower with all the impacts that it has and have it displace natural gas plants, which, you know, from our perspective is really just an insane choice, which is just replacing one source of power, which is a fossil fuel with emissions, with another source of power with comparable emissions.
And Jeff, if you're keeping tabs on this too with the price tag, natural gas right now is dirt cheap, and that is why we are actually seeing a reduction in electric rates now, is because of that natural gas production, which Northern Pass wants to replace.
Now the natural gas, excuse my ignorance, but that's all obtained through drilling, correct?
Yeah, well, it is obtained through drilling, that's correct. There's different ways of drilling. There's been a lot of controversy recently about this process called hydraulic fracturing, or known as fracking, which the conservation community certainly, you know, is having an open discussion on how much reliance should we place on that type of technology for energy production. Conservation Law Foundation's perspective is that, you know, fracking is something that can be done well if it's well controlled and well regulated. It does present some issues for groundwater that need to be resolved. But once you resolve those issues, coal extraction, natural gas extraction, fossil fuels in general are they do have impacts when you extract them. And what we're trying to say with a message on this hydropower issue is that let's consider some of those same trade-offs when you talk about what's supposedly in, you know, one adjective or two adjectives, a green, clean power source. It's important that we understand what those impacts are. It's not a statement saying never, absolutely not. And there could be quite a good role for hydropower if it complemented our energy strategy of moving towards renewables.
And in New Hampshire, we can do that with our existing hydro setups that we have and more that are actually in place that all they have to do is really add the turbines to.
And you're right about that, Brian. There's a lot of untapped potential in hydropower. And another thing to think about is that there have been decisions made in Quebec over time that have resulted in lots of reservoirs being built. But the real question right now is whether you build new ones to increase, you know, to increase
which
the power supply.
Which they want to do for this Northern Pass project, build one of these new reservoirs.
Well, it's definitely driving that demand.
Well Jeff, any other questions?
No, I just make one comment. I'm a realtor. I'm very involved politically, have been for many years, and I've recently served on a group that's working on energy compliance in construction, and that's one way to deal with this energy demand. But I haven't heard a whole lot from the conservation groups as to solutions, more objections. And I think that getting the message out there in terms of this is what we'd like to see, you know, and giving people an answer to look at as to what would be a reasonable answer to the problem might help your cause.
All right.
I appreciate that feedback.
Good. Jeff, thank you very much
for
your call. Take care. All right, Christoph, now let's look into what you have studied so far on this large-scale hydro project and what those trade-offs are, you know, with the greenhouse gas emissions, that there actually are some related to these kinds of large-scale hydro projects.
No, there are, and that's a key question that we've had from the very beginning is what do these reservoirs emit? And looking at it on a per unit of power generated basis so that you kind of can compare a natural gas plant or a coal mm-hmm. plant with a reservoir. What's clear is that these reservoirs, as has been alluded to, as John Harrigan mentioned, you know, when you flood a large amount of previously vegetated area, you're doing two things. You're eliminating what's called a carbon sink. So you're eliminating all that lung capacity that the forests mm-hmm. had previously. So you're essentially causing the emissions, the emissions profile of the planet to change in that way. So you're causing that impact. On the other side, inside the reservoir, all that vegetated material decomposes once you inundate it. So when things decompose, they emit carbon dioxide. Coming out of the reservoir, diffusing out through the water column and up into the atmosphere is carbon dioxide.
Uh-huh.
And so those two sets of impacts, when you put them together and you measure them, it turns out that a new reservoir in Canada will generate about, over the course of its lifetime, you know, over the course of 100 years, it can be as much as two-thirds of the greenhouse gas emissions of a natural gas plant. And it starts out much higher. It starts out somewhere between a coal and a natural gas plant in terms of an emissions profile, and then it declines as that material in the water
has already decomposed.
Gets depleted.
And, yeah.
Yes. But even so, that net effect of eliminating all those forests, you know, means that there is, you know, that you're...
And forget the heavy equipment that's used to build all this stuff and tear all that down.
Well, and it's
a
hugely, quote, carbon-intensive enterprise, as you might imagine, all the caterpillars and heavy earth-moving equipment. It's certainly not free of impacts. And so the key question, you know, that this greenhouse gas emissions work raises, and interestingly, you know, the key question is, what are you going to displace with the power here in New England?
Right, and that has been the other question that we have here, and this is where it's largely unclear. You said that Northern Pass and PS&H would like to displace a natural gas plant, and the big question keeps coming up about Merrimack Station in Bow and how much that $422 million scrubber has cost. We've had you on to talk about the lawsuit against PS&H over the mercury emissions and violations of the Federal Clean Air Act. Now you have the EPA coming in on them about trying to get them to stop making fish chowder out of the Merrimack River. So that's another $130 billion price tag. We're looking at $500 billion in liabilities to the ratepayers of PS&H for years to come, and there is no talk about displacing that monstrosity.
And in fact, there's a...
Whether it's clean burning, whether it's dirty, the dirtiest plant in New England or whatever, from a purely economic standpoint, it just doesn't make sense what they're doing.
No, it's... In fact, if you look at this, if you look at it more broadly, it's pretty clear that those plants are, you know, economic liabilities for the state, as you said. Merrimack and Schiller Station. Merrimack operating...
That's the other coal-burning power plant.
Yes, there's two coal units at Schiller, and Schiller will operate less than 25% this year, according to projections, of its capacity. And yet, we pay, as PS&H ratepayers, for 100% of the fixed costs associated with that facility. Doesn't matter if it runs. Northeast Utilities is entitled to a 9% return on all its costs of keeping that idle plant, there. I mean, it's just an absurd...
Whether they're making money on whether they're generating profits or not.
Whether they're selling power to PS&H customers or not. Looking at PS&H's business as a whole, you can see that there are these issues that are being... they're being shielded from having to deal with them by the regulatory structure, but... Nonetheless, over time, these plants are getting older. And so you look at the right-of-way for 140 miles, that what they're going to be able to do is increase the revenues associated with those rights-of-way by an astronomical number through the Northern Pass Project. Mm-hmm. And that's the motivation, is to take a business which is in trouble in other areas and say, you know, how can we goose this? Our existing assets, which were approved for, you know, system reliability. They were approved under, you know, a different utility model. And now let's, you know, capture as many profits as we can off of that right away. And that's why you see a hostility to the alternatives. That's why you see when we posted this information about greenhouse gases, which relies heavily on work that Hydro-Québec itself did at these reservoirs in northern Quebec. Mm-hmm. The reaction was, you know, there's no debate that we want more hydropower. That was, you know, that was the reaction on our website with posted comments.
And we look at the reason. One of the main reasons why people are opposed to the Northern Pass Project is because there's no benefit for the people who would have 135-foot-taller towers going through their property. They're not getting any of the royalties. They can just look up at the line and see dollar signs going back and forth. And what are they getting out of it? An eyesore, EMF radiation, perhaps, and the like. So destroying our views up and down Interstate 93, White Mountain National Forest, you name it. You know, it's there. We can all certainly visualize that one. So that's why a lot of people are upset by it. And that also may answer another question: why PS&H doesn't consider burying this line along Interstate 93 or the abandoned railroad beds and the like, as they will be studying now, thanks to House Bill 648 and the amendment by Sylvia Larson to that bill, to study using those existing transportation corridors, which are already softened, so you can mitigate the environmental impact on it. But PSNH doesn't want to do that because then they lose out on the ability to rent out those other right-of-ways where they could have made money. Now the state gets the rental fee for using those existing right-of-ways.
No, I mean it's a really challenging situation for PSNH. I think they figured out that Northern Pass is maybe, you know, a godsend in that sense. That's why you've heard them say that this is the best project we've seen in 40 years of doing business in New Hampshire.
Opportunity of a lifetime or something.
It's just so, you know, you see those hostility to alternatives. You see the hostility to the what we see as legitimate questions. We're not saying absolutely not, no way, no how, and under no circumstances. That's not our message. It's let's be honest, have an honest discussion about this.
Northeast Energy Link. Yeah, which would bury a similar type of line from Maine down into Massachusetts, has, I think, changed that debate and to talking about burying it, mitigating those impacts so that, we study this and as well, so it's not just a knee-jerk opposition to it.
No, we're hopeful. You know, there are different approaches out there to moving power from north to south, which is something that we should be planning to do in an open way that secures the most benefits for the public who is going to be affected.
And hopefully not in a crisis mode either, because that's when smart decisions usually are not made.
We shouldn't be in a purely reactive mode. What's ironic is that the conservation community came together and asked for a regional plan to deal with these transmission projects, figuring out the least impactful ways of doing them. We asked DOE for this. The cry that came back from Northern Pass was, this is just a delay tactic.
I remember this.
Well,
yes.
This was 1 year ago, and not one thing has happened during that permitting process since then.
Right.
As a result of them needing to find a right-of-way that they can't—
That permitting process is on indefinite hold right now.
And so the question is, this is a year of squandered opportunity for this, for the public discussion, for the permitting process, and— it's a real shame.
Well, Christoph Corshane from the Conservation Law Foundation, I've got to run. Again, Seeking the Current, it starts Friday, runs through Monday at Red River Theater in Concord. Also Friday night in Wolfboro at the Public Library. You will be at the Red River Theaters next Monday night for the 7 p.m. showing. You and a number of other groups to talk about this, as well as the film director, too.
Yeah, it's really exciting, and so— Feel free, if you have any questions, go to Brian's website or go to clf.org and check out the screenings, sign up for the webinar. I think you'll enjoy it.
That webinar will be on Friday afternoon at 2:30, yeah. So that'll be good.
Thank
Christoph,
you,
good to see you.
I appreciate it.
All right, Bulldog Live continues on The Pulse.